Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. And with Xavi finally finding his feet back at the Camp Nou, our focus on this week's show looks at his plans, or his expected plans, for Barcelona in 2022. Xavi's return to the club, whilst realistic and inevitable, has been greeted with a wave of optimism for what's been a frustrated fan base under Ronald Koeman. Xavi is a big man for a promise, and he's promised a winning mentality back at Barcelona, a positive playing style, and most importantly, a reliance on youth in the months and years to come. So, with that in mind, on today's show, we'll be taking a deeper look at what you can expect from Xavi and Xavi's Barcelona in 2022 and beyond. La Masia, as always, is expected to play a key role in Xavi's revolution, with the strongest crop of players in over a decade starting to emerge from the fabled academy. But alongside the green shoots of youth, there'll be some difficult decisions for Xavi to make in the months to come as his older teammates tick closer, ever closer, to the end of their illustrious Barcelona careers. And with money possibly, potentially, still tight at the club in January, Xavi will be working off a limited budget when it comes to his January transfer moves. Right then, plenty to get talking about today, so let's get started. My name's Fergal Brennan, and as always, we have the president, the self-anointed president of the Pedri fan club, and Squawker's chief football writer, Mohamed Butt. Mo, how's things?
I'm good. Don't forget the Gavi Appreciation Society as well. Propaganda Society, sorry, I should say. So you know, I'm running two now. It's difficult. I'm very busy. But, you know, it's good. I'm glad to be here. Going to talk some Barca. And for once, it's not just going to be all, well, this is all rubbish, isn't it? So that's nice.
Very busy. When you're running these two accounts, running these two propaganda accounts, I don't know how you manage it. You're a very busy character. Alongside Mo and lending us some Barcelona expertise, we have La Liga journalist and podcaster for the Siempre Positivo podcast, Rick Sharma. Rick, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Thanks for having me on, guys. And I'm here for my anointment into those two societies that Mo's got going and any other societies he's got going as well on the side.
Great stuff. Well, that's a bit of an open suggestion. We'll let you discuss that when we finish recording. Right, so let's get stuck into La Masia, because we can't talk about Barcelona, Xavi, without talking about La Masia. The three things just flow. They just fit in together like three bits of a jigsaw. So, Rick, I want to ask you about the situation with La Masia. Looking at this from a non-La Liga perspective, and we look at this from, say, a Premier League perspective or a non-Spanish-based perspective, La Masia is this kind of golden palace of football where they're just spitting out incredibly gifted, talented, wonderful footballers. But in reality, in the last 10 to 15 years, the conveyor belt has slowed down. Someone's turned it off. Someone's unplugged it. We're not really quite sure exactly what's happened. And looking at some of the numbers, Jordi Alba's the last real big name to come through La Masia and establish himself in the Barcelona first team. Sergi Roberto would be on that list as well in terms of players that have made 100 plus appearances for Barcelona. La Masia has slowed down in terms of producing these absolute star names. So I want to ask you, what has been the change in the last 10 years when the talent stream has slowed? Barcelona have looked to dig more into the wider transfer market, buying players from other La Liga teams, buying players from across Europe and the world. La Masia has been put on the back burner somewhat, but in the last 12 to 18 months, it's come roaring back and we've got some of the best players in world football now making their way into the Barcelona first team.
I think it's a vicious cycle in a way. If La Masia slows down a little bit and the players aren't quite as good and Barca buy players, you then get La Masia players you can't get into the first team because they've gone and bought players. You look at Dani Olmo, for example. I think he left in 2014. And who arrived the year before? Neymar. And would Dani Olmo be a starter in the current Barcelona team? Absolutely he would. Or Nana as well, the goalkeeper from Ajax. He'd have a good chance to play with Marc-Andre ter Stegen not in the best of form. Icardi at PSG, would he be starting for Barcelona? He would be starting, yeah. Grimaldo, would he be competing with Jordi Alba right now? He would be. Kubo, is he better than Abde and Ilias probably is at Kubo at the moment. And Adama Traore as well. He'd be in the team. Conrad De La Fuente is one who left recently. Elias left recently too, although for a slightly different reason. He wanted to go. He did have the option to play in the first team. Whereas all of those other players saw their path to the first team blocked. So I wouldn't say the production has slowed down to a halt, because a lot of those players are very good players. A lot of it is about opportunity. And there wasn't opportunity because Barca either had players like Piqué, Busquets, Alba, who come through La Masia, like you say. Alba was the last of those to really establish himself in the first team. Or they've gone and bought players like Neymar, like Luis Suarez, Paulinho, for example. Anyone who's arrived, Frankie de Jong, who's come in and taken those spots up. And so there's nowhere for anyone coming through La Masia to go until now. But the money's stopped. Players have left. Messi's left. Suarez has left. Griezmann's left. Neymar's left. And suddenly the La Masia talents are able to come out of on the conveyor belt and come into the Barcelona team. So I think it's very important, I think, to highlight that. It's not. I don't think it's as clear cut as saying they didn't make any good players for that period of time. Certainly, I absolutely grant you, they haven't made players as good as Puyol, Piqué, Busquets, Alba yet. You know, those players defined an era at Barca. But that's also Iniesta, of course, Xavi. But that's very hard to do. And it is only going to happen every now and then. But that, you know, there have been changes too at La Masia, which has encouraged this new generation to come through. And I think part of that is most other clubs, seeing what Barca did 15 years ago, doing it themselves, and suddenly there are players all over who can fit into this Barca team. Players being made in other academies, clubs like Bayern who play in a quite similar way to how Barca played, but much better and much more modern style than the old Barca. And even Pep Guardiola doesn't play the current old Barca football. He's updated too. So, you know, it takes a little bit of time for the teachings at La Masia to update to the new modern standard of football. And I think that is what we're seeing now, is players who have grown up not just watching the old Barca style of football, but the kind of intervening years since then and now, where they've seen how you need to play. Like, you look at Gavi, you look at Nico, they're players who can press and press really high and press really well, and their work rate is fantastic. And they are the new modern breed of footballer, but with the La Masia style as well.
Yeah, I think what happened was, like you said, Rick, not so much that they stopped producing players, that there was a change in emphasis from Barcelona as a club. They went away from that. What you're describing, the decade you're describing, is the Sandro Rosell decade. Sandro Rosell, Josep Bartomeu in charge of the club. And they don't share the same philosophy of bringing through the youth players that Joan Laporta does, the Cruyffist philosophy, you know, the Van Gaal philosophy, although those two hate each other, but, you know. Just bringing through the young players, relying on La Masia, that they saw La Masia as a way to generate money, 5 million here, 10 million there, the same way that Man United used their youth system, the same way that Chelsea used to before this recent explosion with what they're seeing. Chelsea were producing great talents from out of Cobham for ages. They've only just started using them now, but, you know, same thing. And so Barca, for this decade, because, you know, it wasn't so much I agree with it. They signed Neymar, they signed, you know, other great players, Luis Suarez, but it wasn't so much those guys that were blocking the La Masia kids coming through. It was Andre Gomez, it was Paco Alcácer, it was Junior Firpo, it was Lucas Digne. It was these guys. They didn't need to sign to be backups. They could have saved 30 million, 50 million, 40 million instead of just bringing through. Why did you sign Lucas Digne? You got Alex Grimaldo right there. Why wouldn't you bring him through to be Jordi Alba's backup, replacement, rotation, whatever it is, right? You know, why would you sign Andre Gomez? You've got all these midfielders coming through. You know, it's just a change in philosophy from the club during this presidency of these two guys, Bartomeu and Rosell, that turned it. And Laporta's come back, and it's a coincidence as well, because obviously, yeah, now the money is gone as well, so they can't even go out and buy players. But it's also Laporta has always foregrounded La Masia as much as he possibly could, and I think that's what you're going to see now. Like when he first showed up in Barcelona in 2003, he was shedding these big-name players, Mota, Rockenbach, Giovanni, guys on huge wages, and just getting rid of them. And he's done the same thing again. It's, you know, he's like come back and done the same role again. And again, the trust is now going to come into La Masia. And now you're waiting. Now, can this generation that's coming through, led by, of course, the cringy hashtag Dream Team, you know, Pedri and Ansu Fati, can these two kids who are honestly bona fide superstars, I mean, maybe don't play Pedri 73 games a season, but you know, other than that, he's incredible. Ansu is just, with Ansu, it's just about, can he fully get over these knee problems? And I mean, you think he will, but it's just a matter of time. You can't rush him. Pedri just needs rest, so give him rest, frankly. You know, once those two get fit, they're the standard bearers. These other kids coming in after them, Gavi, Nico, Valde, you know, you mentioned all the names. Can Barca stick with this generation, bring them through, augment them with signings, like the way Pep augmented that La Masia generation with signings, and build a great Barcelona side? I mean, that's what Laporta did last time. In fact, he did it twice because he did it with Rijkaard and with Pep. Can he do it again?
I agree with Mo completely. And I also think that you look at Barca coaches since Tito Villanova, between then and now, we've finally got a coach who wants to, the players in his team that play in this exact way. Luis Enrique is obviously a very good coach, but he and his style of football, and because he had Messi, Neymar and Suarez, was very different. It wasn't about controlling the game. It was about giving those three players the platform they needed to go on and win the treble and do what they did up front. It wasn't about keeping the ball. It was about feeding those three players. So the midfield got completely forgotten in that era. And then you look at the coaches who came after him. Quique Setién was Ernesto Valverde first. And again, he did a very good job with what he had, but it wasn't about dominating games. It was about utilizing the star players. Quique Setién came after him, and he was too afraid to really put his own stamp on the team. And then Ronald Koeman's football was, to be honest, dire for a lot of the time he was in charge. So these young players that are in the team now with Xavi and looking very good, like Nico, for example, just wouldn't have been useful to those coaches before because that wasn't the style of football they were playing. But now they're playing that football.
I mean, Gavi looked like a hatchet man. Gavi looked like a hatchet man under Koeman. He was just doing nothing but getting booked, fouling people all the time. Busquets looked finished. Like, for the last year for Barcelona, except for when they played 3-5-2 and backed him up with three central defenders. Whenever they played 4-3-3 on Busquets, you were just like, he's done. He looks completely rubbish. And then they went away for Spain, played 4-3-3 and looked really good. You're thinking, hang on a minute. What's going on here then? And then you sort of realize, oh, wait, yeah, he's being coached by Luis Enrique in one hand and Ronald Koeman in another. And Luis Enrique, by the way, has adapted very well because like you said, at Barca, he didn't play possession football at all. But now he's at Spain. He doesn't have Messi, Neymar, Suarez. He's like, okay, now we need to keep the ball. And they are. And they're great. Spain are brilliant. And, you know, if Mikel Oyarzabal had not panicked, they'd have won Euro 2020. And, you know, again, if they'd just held their nerve, they could have won the Nations League as well. So they're really improving. They're going to be one of the favourites of the World Cup. Watch out for Spain.
Rick, I just want to ask you, obviously, some of the names that we've thrown around that have come through La Masia that are now breaking into the first team. And I agree with Mo with this idea that there's almost a tiered system within the players that have come through. Fati and Pedri are the standard bearers. They've set the standard off. We've broken into the first team. We've also broken into the Spain team. I know Gavi has made his debut for the senior team under Enrique so far this season. But there is this kind of assumption that Pedri, Fati are up there. Obviously, Fati had his injury, which sidelined him for most of last season. Then maybe a little bit further down, you've got Gavi, and then you've got a block of maybe five or six players that are within consideration for Xavi this season, but are not maybe at that level yet. So in terms of the players that are going to come in the immediacy between now and the end of the season and play a role in Barcelona wanting to drag themselves up the table, get obviously into the top four conversation, which we assume they will, and potentially, depending on how the table throws out in 2022, make a title push. So looking at the players that are available, these wonder kids coming through La Masia into the first team, who do you see being absolute nailed-on key players for Xavi in the months to come?
Like you say, Ansu Fati, if he's fit, he's obviously going to be in the team. He offers everything they don't have at the moment, which is someone who can finish clinically, someone who's quick, someone who can beat a man. You know, he's absolutely nailed on. Gavi and Pedri they've been phenomenal. I think I'd include Nico in that bracket too, Nico, because he's come to the fore this year, and in the friendlies in the summer, I think Gavi looked great and Nico less great. But within Barcelona, within the club, they've always backed Nico as the one who's going to make it out of this generation. I know Gavi's the one that's got more traction, has been in the Spain squad, but Nico's always been the one that they've, within the club, thought was going to do it. And I you know, I've seen him for Barca B, of Barca youth teams even a bit, and like, I didn't see it, but now I do. And now it's become so clear with Xavi to see Nico play so high up the pitch and win the ball back. He won the ball back against Espanyol in the penalty area. And like his pressing in the first half against Benfica was fantastic as well. And he's just gone from strength to strength. My only surprise is that Luis Enrique didn't call him up in the recent international break. Then comes the next kind of tier of players with the two young wingers, Abde and Ilias, who have played recently under Xavi. And of those two, Ilias is 17 years old. He has been tipped much hotter than Abde. But in the game against Espanyol, Abde came on at half time and he was actually much more effective than Ilias. And of course, part of that is because Espanyol were more tired in the second half. So Abde comes on and he's got a more tired fullback to run at. But I think that in the Xavi system, it might end up actually being Abde who is more useful for him because he's more direct, I think, than Ilias. Ilias likes to come inside. Abde's quite happy to beat a man on the outside and get a ball across. You know, sometimes it doesn't work when they haven't got anyone in the middle to head it in. But if he can just like fizz some low balls across, I think that's going to be pretty useful, especially when Ansu's back, because Ansu Fati is gonna feed off that.
So Ansu loves the ball. Abde, I think the biggest he has over Ilias is that he's 19, Ilias is 17. Ilias still looks very much like a player figuring out what he does, right? And it's the same thing when Yusuf Demir came in the summer and everyone was like really hyped about him in the friendlies and he looked really good. But then you saw him in competitive football and suddenly it's a bit like, ooh, he's not as sure of himself. And I think Ilias has that same thing because he's 17, right? Yusuf Demir is 18. Abde is 19. He's a bit more mature. And I think you saw that against Espanyol. And I think he can't play in the Champions League because they haven't registered him. And he can't be registered with Barca B because he's only just joined the club this summer. So he can't be on the B list, which is where they put most young players. But I like Abde a lot. I think I agree with Rick. I think he's going to be really big, not because he's such a brilliant player necessarily, but because he's quick and he's physical. And Xavi loves actual pure wingers. And he's a pure winger. And I think he'll thrive for Barca for that, if that reason, if nothing else. He'll just offer pure width on the left, on the right. And we know Dembele's going to get injured again, right? So Dembele was sensational against Benfica, but we know he's going to get hurt again. So, yeah. I suspect that they will do very well. And, you know, Gavi obviously is... I like Nico. Do you know what it is? I was the same as Rick. When I watched Nico, I was like... I mean, I want him to succeed. He's Fran's kid. Everyone loves Fran. Remember Fran from Super Deport? Great little player. And it was like, okay, you want Nico to do well, but you don't see it because he was a defensive midfielder ostensibly. And he's a good passer of the ball and he can play that role, but it's not like... He doesn't seem to fly in the role the way the Busquets did when he was 20. But then, like you said, Xavi put him further forward, and it's like, oh, okay, he's just a bull in the china shop sort of thing, rampaging presence, a real physical midfielder. I love Xavi's comment, by the way. Everyone's like, oh, Xavi, do you just sign a physical midfielder? He goes, I've got Frankie de Jong and Nico. I've got physical midfielders. What are you talking about? You know, I mean, that was a really racist question, to be honest, when you think about it, because we all know what he really meant. Are you going to sign physical midfielders? But look, they've got Nico. I like Nico a lot. I think he's going to be good. Gavi just has something about him, though, isn't it? There's just that sort of like the same thing with Pedri. You're just like, are you real? How are you 17? Are you possible? This is not possible. What's going on here? There's some time travel shenanigans going on there with Gavi and Pedri. You're just like, huh? Because Ansu, right? Ansu is obviously young and looks young and plays like a young player with incredible talent. Pedri and Gavi play like they're flipping 27. And you're just like, huh?
There is one player that I don't think gets mentioned very much but could end up being very good is Mika Marmol from the B team. He's 20 years old, so maybe doesn't fit into that dream teen tag, but he's obviously very young. He's centre-back, left-footed. He's got... I mean, it's a bit of an exaggeration to say he's got the best of Umtiti and the best of Lenglet, but that's kind of the way he plays. He's very good at anticipating. He's very good at darting out of defence just to get, you know, reading the game and getting in the right positions, and he's very good on the ball. And I was a little bit surprised to see Xavi start Lenglet against Benfica, but he did okay. But I don't know how much longer time there is going to be for Lenglet at the club. And if they do get rid of him in the winter window, because, you know, obviously they still want to make some money so they can spend some money, then Mika Marmol, I think, is capable of stepping up and being the left centre-back in the left of the three centre-backs. If they use that formation they used against Benfica, that's definitely one to watch.
They might have to just find a different job for him in the club shop, maybe. If they can't get rid of him, they'll have to give him something to do. They'll find something for him to do, I'm sure. Xavi will give him a little job to pick up. Rick, I just want to ask you in terms of system. Obviously, we're only working off two games for Xavi so far, the Espanyol win and then the Benfica draw in the Champions League. But he has looked to tweak and change things and look to maybe deploy a different system and change mid-game in Benfica to try and impact the game a little bit more and go on and win it. And you mentioned there Nico is one of the most interesting aspects of this, because when we talk about Barcelona midfields of the past, we talk about that carousel of Busquets, Xavi himself and Iniesta of just dominating the ball, dominating the opponents and eventually wearing them down. What Nico does is very 2020-21, which is press high up, win, and then impact the game. Get your midfielders higher up the pitch to impact the game in different area of the park. And that's something that will obviously play in his favour, because we know this idea that football has moved on and Barcelona have, whether it's willingly or unwillingly, had to move with it. There's a lot of players to fit into an 11. And Ansu Fati has had his fitness problems. He's played very little so far this season because of that. And obviously last season was wrecked by injury. Memphis Depay has come in and done relatively well so far this season. As we look to move towards what Xavi's 11 will be, how does he fit all these players in without removing the experience blocks of Busquets? Frenkie de Jong obviously is still a massive player. Gerard Piqué at the back. And Memphis Depay, who has done well so far this season. How does he fit all these players in and ensure that he's still getting the best from them?
Well, for one, it's a good problem to have rather than a bad problem. And I think that we saw his formation against Benfica was the one he used quite often with Al Sadd, which has been very rarely used in Spain, at least for the last 10, 15 years or so, is one with three centre-backs, two pivots, two interiors, so like a block of four in midfield, which is basically putting all of his best players on the pitch. That's where the concentration of the best players is in midfield. And then three forwards, one wide on the left, one wide on the right, and then it was Memphis up front. I disagree with your Memphis. I don't think he's been very good this season. I know Mo's a big Memphis fan as well, but I think Xavi will be tearing his hair out at some of Memphis's finishing of late and all through the season, really. Most of his goals have been penalties. I think he's got four from the penalty spot and three from open play, if that's correct.
That's a great example. I love Memphis. I do love him so much. I think he's wonderful. I think he's charismatic. I think he's got the leadership qualities that you want. But he was really good for the first three games of the season when Martin Brathwaite was in the team. He was really good. You're thinking, okay, they've got one here. And then they signed Luke de Jong and Koeman started playing him on the left and his form just took a massive nosedive. Like, because he's not a winger. He can play wing, but like for Barcelona especially, he doesn't have the get up and go that you want a winger to have. He slots the ball. He slows it down. Kind of like Ronaldinho from 2006, 2008, rather than Ronaldinho from 2004 to 2006, which is what you want, which is the winger that gets the ball and runs at the opponent. Memphis gets the ball, stops it, and then looks to what to do as a winger. As a forward, he works. He's very good. But like the Koeman knocked his confidence, knocked his rhythm completely. He's been rubbish, frankly, since that international break, since Brathwaite got injured after his first three games. And Xavi is a completely different style of football to anything he's played before. I mean, Van Gaal kind of gives him a sort of primer for the Netherlands, but Van Gaal only has him for, 2 weeks? He's had him for like a month total, 3 weeks total since then. He's not, you can tell he's still very much adapting to what Xavi wants. And yeah, I agree with Rick. I think about it's Benfica. He was so frustrating. He could have won the game. He had two chances where it's like, just make a smarter play and you win the game. And he just made a silly play both times. I think obviously Barca need a winger for me more than a striker, but it wouldn't surprise me if they look for a striker as well, because I don't think Memphis is really a great fit for Xavi and Xavi's style of football, which is sad because, again, I love Memphis.
I think there was always, when they signed Memphis, the idea that if it didn't go well, they'd picked up a player for nothing who they could then sell for 40 million the next summer and immediately make a chunk of money back. But yeah, like you said, in terms of tactics, I think that Xavi will just look to maximise the amount of midfielders he has on the pitch to A, have more of the ball, and B, get his best players on the field. And it worked against Benfica. I was surprised he went that early with that formation, because obviously it takes a lot of drilling to get the players to play in that formation, but it worked.
It's the Cruyff thing, isn't it? It's essentially a 3-4-3 diamond, or it can be a 3-4-3 with an actual box in midfield. Depends on what they need at the time. But it's a very risky formation. The only time it's really been used regularly in the last like 10 years was when Lucho, at the back end of 2016-17, had to beat PSG 6-0 or 5-0 and said, okay, well, the only way we're going to do this is if we just go completely dominant the ball, use the formation. And I mean, I was crying tears of joy before it even kicked off. I was like, oh my God, it's the greatest. Because I love that formation. I love it. Pep used it a little bit in 2011-12. And I was just loving it because it's what Cruyff played. It's the Cruyff formation in the Dream Team, which you're thinking, there's no way anyone has the balls to do this in modern football. Pep did it. And then Lucho did it, but only briefly, both of them. Although Pep, to be fair, injuries kind of derailed it with David Villa getting hurt. And that kind of derailed the formation. But And Abidal as well. That was the main one. When Abidal went, you can't really put that formation without Abidal for Pep's team. Xavi going there already is so amazing. I love it, honestly. And it's so... Like the Rick says, it puts his best players on the pitch. And what he's going to do, unlike a lot of other Barca managers in the past, not mentioning any names, Tata Martino, when they put, and Ernesto Valverde, when they put four midfielders on the pitch, it was in a line of four, playing a 4-4-2 to defend. It wasn't to dominate, and there were no wingers. Neymar was the only winger. Tata played, I think Valverde was like, I think he got must have been allergic to wingers. I think the way he treated Dembele and Malcolm, I think he was physically allergic to them, which is why hearing him nick with Man United, by the way, is hilarious. Jadon Sancho must be sitting there going, oh, brilliant. Yeah, that sounds great. Look, the 3-4-3 that he played against Pico was great. The having midfielders is great, but what is going to really make the Barca work is the fact that they have wingers. They'll have wingers. No matter what they do, Xavi's like obsessed with wingers. I want wingers, you know, keep wits. So Jordi Alba will see a new lease of life as a winger. I think that also will be easier to bring Alex Balde into the team because I think he's very young and very, very courageous. But like, obviously, he's 17-year-old left back. You're thinking, oof, but playing as a winger, maybe it'd be easier. And then on the right, that's where I think Abde is going to come in. Ousmane Dembele as well. Yeah, as long as Araujo stays fit, it should all be okay. The problem is if Araujo gets injured, that back line has no pace and it has very little strength, and it's only PK in the air that's any good in the air. So that's the only thing with the 3-4-3. If Araujo is injured, it's not going to work.
Yeah, risky. And the one other thing I say on the wingers is Ousmane Dembele, for example, he's been blasted at Barca every time he loses the ball, because when he loses the ball, the team has to retreat and they end up having to defend a counter-attack. But now the midfielders are pressing so high up the pitch. What happens when Dembele loses the ball is it's almost another opportunity for Barca to attack, because you have Nico, you have Gavi immediately counter-pressing to win the ball back. And Dembele losing it is much less of a problem, because if the other team have got it, Barca are so high up the pitch, they've still got to play their way through Barca. And if they do, they're still 50 yards from goal. So I think that it could be a very good time for Dembele.
Rick, I just want to ask you, obviously, in terms of some of the other big decisions, aside from tactics and transfers that we'll touch on a little bit later on, the big elephant in the room for Xavi is this idea of some of the senior players. Because for all of the positivity of youth, you have the practicality of age or experience. And you look through the Barcelona squad list in terms of some of the average age. You've got Gerard Piqué that Mo mentioned there, that is still an important player at the back. By the start of next season, he'll be 35. Dani Alves, who's come in, is 38. He'll turn 39 later this year. And there's other key players that were former teammates of Xavi. Alba, that we've mentioned, is knocking on. He's going to be 33 this season. And obviously, Sergio Busquets, who's still massively, massively influential in the midfield, he's also edging towards the end of his career. He's going to be 34 before the end of 2022. So when we look at those massive decisions, these were always going to come at some point. Barcelona have arguably brought Xavi back because he's the best player to make those decisions. He's played with these players. He knows how cutthroat it is. He knew when his time came, when to step aside. Same with Iniesta. Obviously, the Messi situation is messy and he's now gone to PSG. But this is going to be difficult with him. It has to be handled delicately in terms of not upsetting the balance within the squad and within the team. But he does have ready-made replacements to come into certain areas of the team. When you look at the players that are going to be inevitably moved out and the players that are going to be moved in, who do you see starting to replace those players? And when do you think it's going to start to happen?
I think next summer is going to be very interesting, because Xavi, his message since he's come in has always been, it's a positive to have these players in the dressing room that I've played with before, that are veterans, that have knowledge, that have all the experience. And that's a good thing. And so far, I mean, look at Sergio Busquets. Xavi's taken 5 years off Sergio Busquets because with the midfield playing how high up it is, and he doesn't have anywhere near as much running to do with space to cover. It looks a lot better already. And so it makes it a bit harder to judge when these players are going to be out of the team. Piqué is the one who's suffering the most, I think, out of this, because he is having to play much higher up. And over the last few years, he's been inching further and further and further back towards his own goal. So he has less running to do. So that's one to watch. And I think a colleague of mine, Tony Wamati, said that Piqué's average fouls has gone up hugely in the first couple of games with Xavi, because he's playing so much higher up the pitch. So he's committing double the amount of fouls because he doesn't trust himself to be able to get back and cover.
There was one in Benfica, particularly where he just took, when Nunez came on, he just kicked him. He was like, yeah, just stay there. Like, he's like, you could have won that PK. He's like, no, I'm not nervous. Just foul him. Like, you could tell he's getting nervous.
Yeah, exactly. I think Alba is an interesting one because if he plays on the left wing, then maybe he can carry on for a bit longer than you'd think at left back, because his defensive errors were telling increasingly in the Barca team. But if he's got less defending to do and more of an attacking role, maybe he can last a bit longer. And Sergio Roberto, we don't really know yet because he's just come back from injury. We haven't seen him play under Xavi. So you expect he's going to be out, because I think a lot of Barca fans fed up of him. But, you know, with Xavi, maybe he will find a new home for him. Although there's so many young, talented midfielders, I don't really see it. But then with those players, so Pique, I already mentioned Mika Marmol from the B team, and there's Arnau as well, another centre-back who could be useful. Busquets is a very interesting case, because let's say in 1 year Busquets is his time's up and he goes, is it Frenkie de Jong? Because that's what Frenkie de Jong was bought for, to play in that position. Is it Nico? Because Nico, again, that's the position that he was always tipped to play coming through. Obviously, as we've spoken about, he's been impressing much further up the pitch. So I think there's a lot of options. And of course, in Xavi's system, Xavi's midfield, any of those four players could, apart from maybe Busquets further forward, could it play realistically in any of the positions? Because it's all about where they are and what they have to do, and what they have to do is pass the ball to each other. And I think they can do that whichever position they're in. So probably I would guess De Jong is the guy that will take Busquets' position, even though he's not one of the younger players in the team. Although he is still quite young, if you actually look at how old he is. The sickening thing really for Barca is, or for Barca fans maybe watching, is that De Jong's come in at this young age and has just been expected to carry the team. And it's like, this guy's still a kid himself.
He's 24, I think, right? He's a poor guy. He's been through so much. Like, I think when Xavi got appointed, I was happiest for him more than anyone else, because he came in like starry-eyed. You know, my dream progression was to go from Ajax to Arsenal to Barcelona. I've skipped Arsenal. I'm already at Barcelona. How great is this? Fantastic. Playing with Messi. He loves Messi. Like, when Messi was rumoured to leave after the 8-2, they interviewed De Jong in Inter Street. He was like, oh, I hope he doesn't go. And he looked like he was about to cry. And then Messi did leave. And I felt so bad for him. And it's like, man, being coached by Ronald Koeman, and you could see it was draining the life out of poor Frankie. And now he's under Xavi. And it's going to be hard, by the way. Frankie hasn't been great under Xavi yet. You can see he's still struggling. But do you know what it is? I bet you he's loving it, because I bet you in training, he's learning things every day. He's actually being challenged to improve as a player. And that's going to be huge for him. I don't think Frankie will replace Busquets, by the way. I think it's going to be Pedri. I think of all of the midfielders, you look at them, who of them has the least potential to score goals? It's Pedri. Like you said, Rick, anyone can play anywhere, right? That's the first thing. They could all play there. But all of the other ones, I would back them to. Gavi, I'd back to score a goal more than Pedri. Nico, maybe not score a goal, but he can press like crazy. You want him further forward. And Frenkie, we know, can score. So it's like, and even the forgotten man, Ricky Pooch, the once and never messiah, he can score. He's better in attack. He's better further forward. I think Pedri, who can't score, is awful at scoring goals. I think he'll move further back. That's just a prediction. Maybe it won't come true. But frankly, the main thing is Busquets, I don't think he's going anywhere for a while. Like you said, Xavi's system takes years off Busquets. He looks completely revitalized. Jordi Alba is an offensive powerhouse. He's a weakness defensively. And I think eventually he'll get replaced, just because if he's a winger, I'm sure they'll sign other wingers. Ansu Fati coming back might impinge on his minutes. Whatever, they'll find a way. Pique is the problem. Busquets is not even a problem anymore. He's gone from being a big problem to not even being a problem, I think, under Xavi. Alba is maybe not, with Balde coming through, with Xavi wanting more wingers. But who knows what happens to Alba, but I think he's just become part of a rotation. The issue is Pique, because he's the defensive leader, and you can't really put Araujo in that role, because Araujo can't pass the ball. He's very limited pass of the ball. You can tell he didn't come through La Masia. He was bought for Barca B, and he's done very well. I think he's a phenomenal defender, and they need him fit in defence. But I don't think he can assume Pique's role, because he's not a great passer of the ball, as Pique is. And you could argue, okay, fine, you put Eric Garcia in there. Eric is still a complete 50-50 for me. It's telling that Xavi didn't play him against, he didn't want to put him against Darwin Nunez or against any of the Benfica forwards, because he's like, yeah, look, I'm not stupid. I learned my lesson from the last game they played in Lisbon. So we don't know with Eric Garcia. I hope he does what comes good. But yeah, Pique is the unknown. For me, Pique is the one most likely to leave in the summer. or if not leave, then definitely just massively have, see his role reduced. Because maybe you want to keep him around. Maybe like with Alves, I don't think he signed Alves to start, by the way. I think he signed Dani Alves because you want, my friend Diana Christine said this on Twitter, you need a veteran who isn't traumatized, essentially. Like, no. You look at all...
Yeah, he wasn't there for any of those beatings. Wasn't there for Liverpool, wasn't there for Rome, wasn't there for whatever, yeah.
Yeah, like Dani Alves left Barcelona having just lost, knocked out the Champions League to Atletico Madrid when they didn't get a last-second penalty in the Calderon, which would have sent them through, right? That's Dani Alves' last Champions League game with Barcelona. Then he knocked Barcelona out with Juventus the next year, lost in the final, but after beating with Benucci and whatever. And yeah, he missed Rome, missed Anfield, missed the 8-2, you know, missed the PSG thing last year. For him, and there's a quote, isn't it? When I put this Barca shot on, I feel like a superhuman. So it's for the others, for PK and Busquets in the Champions League, Alba especially, we know it weighs them down. You can feel they play with the expectation of, oh my God, it's going to happen again. Alves doesn't have that. And I think that was a great point Deanna made, that he'll remind the kids, look, man, you're playing for Barcelona. This is a great team. It's a great shirt to wear. We can do anything, you know? I think he's mostly there for that. And then also for himself, he's there to stay fit for the World Cup.
Right, we're going to look ahead to transfers. Obviously, the January window is just around the corner, and then looking slightly further ahead, we have the summer. So we're just going to do a kind of quick fire round through some of the players that have been linked with exits and some of the players that might potentially come in if Xavi gets his way. But before we get into that, Mo, we were talking about before we started recording, the financial situation with Barcelona over the summer was massively high profile. Obviously, the situation surrounding Lionel Messi's contract, which was agreed, then not agreed, he left and joined PSG. There was this constant line of there's no money, we can only secure free transfers. And that was the case in terms of the players that came in. Obviously, Memphis, Sergio Aguero came in, Eric Garcia came in at the back. But your view on this is that there is money available, but that Barcelona and particularly Joan Laporta were slightly unwilling to give it to Ronald Koeman. Xavi comes in and they are willing to back him, maybe not to the same level as previous managers, but to a much greater extent than they did with Ronald Koeman.
No, I don't think there's money available now. I think the way that the salary cap system works in La Liga that Barca ran afoul of, how to get rid of Messi, was it judges you based on your debts, your reported debts, and your revenue, right? So if your revenue is high enough, doesn't matter how much debt you have, you can keep spending money, which is why Barca and Madrid for years just kept churning out money, spending 100 millions of players. It didn't seem to bother them. What COVID did was COVID created that revenue, and then suddenly, oh my God, we're spending our outlays are... We're spending 800 million on our team, and we're not bringing a billion anymore. Oh dear, what do we do, right? And so, and then obviously it completely collapsed the house of cards they built for Barcelona. Real Madrid, it did similar, but Real Madrid didn't have as much of an issue because Real Madrid, frankly, a better run. Florentino Perez is much smarter than Jose Bartomeu. What can I say? And he years ago, obviously started saving for Mbappe, essentially. Like clearing out a lot of players, not renewing, not making massive signings. Like the only big signings they made, Hazard, Vinicius and Rodrigo, really, in the last few years. I mean, they made a mistake of selling Hakimi for 40 million, but, you know, they're shedding wages. They're going to lose Bale and Isco for free in the summer, I think. You know, they've been very much, very fiscally responsible. They let Ramos go, you know, they let Varane go. You know, okay, they're paying Alaba a lot of money, but essentially they're well run. Barcelona not well run. They kept spending money that wasn't there. Awful, awful run club under Bartomeu. And so they had debts, right? And that's what was going to give them financial problems. I think they had reported debts like 250 million or something last season. And that was going to be a problem. And so and then they're going to have about 250 million debts of this season as well. So their spending was going to be limited for like this season, next season, so on and so forth. And what Laporta did very creatively was he took all the debt that was going to be reported for this season and plunked it onto last season, which meant that instead of reporting 250 million debt, they put, like, I think, nearly 500 million of debt for last season, which absolutely cratered their financial spending for this season. Like, there was the graphic going around, Barca could spend 97 million, which is less than like Wolves, I think, and everyone made the joke, Barca broke. And yeah, they are. For this year, they're broke. And that's why I think he didn't want to sack Ronald Koeman either, because he knew Laporta, this year was going to be very hard. They were just going to grind out and try and get top four and stay afloat. Because then, by cratering the finances last year, it means that this year, their financial reporting, they'll end up reporting more, either a smaller loss, a much smaller loss, or maybe even a slight profit, depending on how things go with the stadium and with tours and with that. So it basically, it's a bit of financial jiggery pokery to basically make Barca's finances look healthier than they are, allowing for a quicker bounce back. And I think, so I think as a result, remember the spending cap is about revenue. And I think, so I think, and if so, if you're not reporting huge debts, your revenue is going to naturally, and your profits are going to climb. So I think next summer 2022, they're actually going to have a fair bit of money to spend. Maybe not massive amounts of money, still be limited. They'll still have to work within sensible budgets and stuff. But I think they won't be flat broke. Like this year, they're flat broke. They only signed three players on the free transfer. They couldn't even register them until Piqué took a pay cut. It was embarrassing. They had to let the best player in the history of football go. Like, completely and utterly miserable. But I think next season, I think they were not going back up to their massive levels. They're not going back to Real Madrid levels just yet. But they'll be in a much healthier position than they are last year. They'll have some money to spend, and I think they will.
Looking at some of these names, Rick, the first one that comes to mind in terms of contracts, 2022 is the final year of Ousmane Dembele's contract. His injury record is obviously well publicised in terms of the games that he's missed. There's an argument that he's missed more games than he's actually played, although I think that's probably a little bit unfair on him. But it does seem to be reaching a crunch period in terms of Dembele's future at Barcelona Football Club, whether Xavi wants him to stay, whether he wants him to stay, and as Mo said, whether the club can afford to keep him, because it will be a big contract that they would have to give him. Where do you see this playing out? There's an opportunity for maybe Xavi to revive him if they can create some sort of situation where he can remain injury free for an extended period of time, or do you think his road is run at Barcelona?
I think it's possibly the most fascinating issue at Barcelona right now is the Ousmane Dembele issue. Xavi's dialogue on Dembele since arriving has been so positive. He came in and he said Dembele can be the best player in the world in his position, given the, you know, the right work. And every opportunity Xavi's had to talk about Dembele, he's praised him and said he wants him to stay. He says Dembele is happy, telling Joan Laporta the same thing. You got to renew this guy when Xavi was being presented when he just arrived. And there's no doubt that what Xavi sees in Dembele is a player that can fit exactly what he wants in a winger. Someone who will take those risks, someone who can beat a man, someone who can create, someone who's potentially world-class. And given the financial situation, it's not like Barca are going to be buying a top level talent that could be as good as Ousmane Dembele could be in the near future. You know, even if they sign a player next summer, it won't be a superstar. They might be able to spend some money, but it won't be a Haaland. It won't be an Mbappe. So what Xavi sees is a player who could get to that level. And what his mission is to resurrect him. And there's a story in Sport today saying that Xavi had took Dembele aside and sat down with him, had a heart-to-heart, and told him what he expected of him, not just this season, but next season, the season after, telling him he can make him into this player that can be as good as anyone else in the game, really. And so from Xavi's side of it, there's no issue. From Barca's side of it, the issue is Dembele's agents are dragging this thing out until at least January to hear what other clubs have to say. When, you know, anyone can make an offer for him and speak to him and tell him what they propose. But I think, as far as I know, from Dembele's side of it, I think he sees what Xavi's doing and he would like to stay. But, you know, if someone comes in and says they'll play you three times as much, then it's kind of a difficult choice to make. But from the fan side of it, when Dembele came on at Camp Nou the other day, I've not heard Camp Nou that loud in so long. It was the stadium was roaring. And it's kind of strange because, like you said, in these years, he's been out for longer than he's played at times. And certainly for the first couple of years, he was behaving unprofessionally. Even recently, he's been kind of still turning up a little bit late to training. Thought one session was in the afternoon, but it was in the morning. So the club phoned him up and they were like, "Where are you?" And he goes, "Oh, I thought it was in the afternoon." And to be fair to him, when I saw the training schedule for that week, I also thought, "Oh, that's a bit odd." Barca are training at night one day and then in the morning the next day. And Dembele also fell foul of that. But it's the fans do also see the same thing that Xavi sees in him, which is a player that is far superior to anyone else at the club in that one particular thing, which is having the magic and spark to basically just destroy an opponent and, because of that, create a huge imbalance in the attack and create goals from it.
Looking at the other end of the pitch, Rick, in terms of possible outgoings in January, and Mo's touched on some of the defensive issues, obviously the situation with Piqué in his advancing years, the fact that he's nearing the end of his time at Barcelona. It's still a bit of a toss of coin on Eric Garcia, whether he'll turn into the player that Barcelona wants and hope him to be. Oscar Mingueza's maybe dropped down the pecking order a little bit. Araujo is talented, but is limited in certain areas. So then you find yourself with this situation. We joked about it at the beginning with Clément Longley. The long contract that he's got means that he's tied from a wages and a contract point of view. And you also have Samuel Umtiti that Barcelona have been apparently trying to get rid of forever and just not been able to find a buyer. And when you look at Longley and you look at Umtiti and their situations, Xavi's maybe a little bit snookered because he would happily definitely let Umtiti go and maybe let Longley go. But because all of those other defenders, there's an asterisk next to their name for whatever reason, he maybe can't let both of them go. But in January, maybe he's able to let one of them go.
Given how hard it is to get rid of them, any opportunity that they get to get rid of them should be taken. And there's a funny thing going around at the moment where any player Barca doesn't want is linked with Newcastle United. Because obviously they've got a load of money. So there's like, oh, Coutinho is going to Newcastle. Lenglet is going to Newcastle. Umtiti going to Newcastle. And it's like, well, it's wishful thinking, I think, from the Barcelona perspective. But with Comas, Arnau Comas and Mika from the B team, I think they can cover those gaps. And they won't always play three at the back. You know, the first game he played four at the back with two centre-backs. So I think they would let them go if they can. And I think that the other thing is Xavi did say, and he has spoken to a lot of the players individually, he is willing to give anyone a chance at the club. It's like a, you know, starting from a new page. So, and according to reports, Umtiti has been you know, solid, decent in training. He's physically fit, which is the main issue with Umtiti, is that he hasn't been fit for so long and he's kind of got out of practice. I wouldn't be stunned if we saw Umtiti play a game for Barca, for Xavi, and see how he goes. I'm not expecting great things from him. But like we said with the Dembele situation, because of the limited resources, you look at everything you've got and see what you can take out of it. And then, you know, this month coming up now, December and then November, December is the time for that. And then in January, they'll see who they can get rid of and who can come in.
The other name that you mentioned there was next on my list, Felipe Coutinho. Obviously, he's been linked with a return back to the Premier League, whether that's Moneybags Newcastle or whether that's someone else in the English top flight. He's got a bit longer on his contract, just over 18 months still to run. He has slowly edged his way back into the team under Koeman at the start of the season. And as you say, Xavi is determined to have this idea of a blank page. Everyone starts from zero with me. But you do still get the sensation that he's on that list of players that Laporta is saying, we need money, we need to free up wages. He's someone that can be shifted off without maybe having a massively detrimental impact on Xavi's plans at Barcelona.
Well, he had a blank page, but immediately dropped a big splodge of ink onto it in his performance against Espanyol when he came on. Man, the last 20 minutes of that game were horrendous to watch. Like every time the ball came to Coutinho, he lost it basically, which is the one thing you can't do when you're protecting a 1-0 lead.
And the best thing, of course, was at the end when he had that clearance from Roulet. Everyone's like, oh my God, what a clearance. Of course, what they're neglecting to mention is he chested the ball to Roulet in the first place. It's like, he chests the ball, you're in the area, he chests the ball, and Roulet's about to volley it in. It's like, oh, better stop that then. And he kicks it away. And it's like, okay, you clean up your own mess. Yeah, no, Coutinho's horrible. He doesn't fit Barca's system. There was a question of, did he ever fit Barca's system? Was he ever going to? Maybe there was a chance if Ernesto Valverde had stuck with the plan to try and make him into a midfielder. Maybe, slim chance it would have worked. But Valverde gave up on that after five games. And I think Coutinho's nose was put out by that. And he's not been the same ever since. He was good for half a season. And he's basically, the only reason he's not the biggest flop of all time is because Eden Hazard is drastically trying to compete with him for that title. Like, it's one of those two. The biggest, 160 million they paid for Coutinho. Absolute disaster. Again, I said earlier, they could have signed Dembele and Mbappe in that summer instead because they were so obsessed with Coutinho, they wasted the whole summer trying to sign him. Waited 6 months, signed him again. And what all they got out of it was a player who, frankly, didn't even do anything too crucial in that league and Copa wins. They could have won there without him. It's a real thing. But the one thing is, he is still Coutinho. He has a reputation. He has a lot of quality and talent. We know this. So there is a possibility. I mean, Newcastle, that is the one player, Newcastle, I could see them actually going, yeah, you know what, we'll take him. Because Umtiti has no knees. What the hell is he going to do in the Premier League? That doesn't make any sense. Longley can't handle physical players. What the hell is he going to do in the Premier League? That, again, it's just nonsense rumour. Sergio Roberto and Coutinho, the only two players I could see realistically going to Newcastle, essentially, right? Like, if they want to sell someone to Newcastle. Those two, they fit the Premier League. We know Coutinho's played there before. I don't think it will happen necessarily. But yeah, they would love to sell Coutinho if they could. Oh my God. Like, massive wages off the books. Just get his sulky, surly, nonsense demeanor out of there. I mean, I couldn't wait. And he doesn't fit anywhere. He's not a midfielder. He's not a forward. Not a winger. What is he? You know.
Last two players that I want to ask you about, Mo. One of Barcelona's plans this season, when they realised they couldn't sell all these players that were trying to offload, was to loan them out to get rid of the wages. Miralem Pjanic went to Besiktas on a season-long loan. And obviously Antoine Griezmann in a bizarre, but also not bizarre when you know that it's Griezmann that's involved, went back to Atletico Madrid. The deal as it stands is a two-year loan, which kicks in at the start of next season for his second year of the loan. And then at the end of that season, they've got a compulsory purchase order on it. These two players do seem to have one foot, if not both feet, out of the door at Barcelona. Do you think this is it? Do you think this is both of them gone? If someone comes in for Pjanic in January, maybe a permanent deal to Besiktas. There's talk of Fenerbahce also having a look at him. Antoine Griezmann seems to be relatively reignited back at Atletico Madrid. Do you think this is both of them done in terms of their career at Barcelona?
Yeah, they're gone. They're gone. Technically, I suppose there's a slight chance Pjanic should come back because Pjanic's problem was Koeman, not Barcelona. But Barca have midfielders. They're stocked for midfielders. They don't need one. They don't need Pjanic, basically. They could use Griezmann, the good Griezmann, the Atletico Madrid Griezmann, but that guy never showed up in Barcelona in the first place. So, he's done as well. He's not going to come back. And I don't think they want him back, frankly. Again, very disappointing player. But unlike Dembele, who's been injured, unlike Coutinho, who never fit anyway, yeah, he had so many chances, Griezmann, to work it out. Never showed. And apart from the cup final and the Super Cup final against Athletic Bilbao last year, and maybe like, what was it, the Villarreal game where he scored that lob, never really looked like being a Barca player. And that's disappointing. It's very frustrating. But, you know, he'll do very well. He did very well at Athletic. He'll do well for Athletic. He's very good there.
One thing I found interesting on Griezmann recently, and this again comes from the guy I mentioned before, Tony Wamati. He went to the Barca game, the Espanyol game recently, sat in VIP area and spoke to some very interesting people. And one of them, very good source who would know about this, told Tony that Xavi would have loved to have Antoine Griezmann available. That Xavi would have used him in that centre-forward role because you drop away from the front into the positions he likes to play in. And it would have been interesting. And I think there's obviously very hard for him to come back to Barca now. 95% is going to Atletico Madrid. But because of hearing that, I just wonder, we'll see again, and Barca don't have the capability to sign big players. I wonder if they'll try and next summer do something with that deal, talk to Atletico and see if there is a chance of having Griezmann back. I mean, it's pretty unlikely. But having heard that news, I was like, well, could be an interesting thing to look at.
And obviously we're expecting some possible departures in January, maybe even later, further down the line in the summer from Barcelona, Mo. But there is also going to be focus on who Xavi wants to bring in terms of identifying targets. And this idea that he is looking to build his own team, he's got some fantastic building blocks in place already. But he will look to augment that with star players, whether they're younger players, whether they're more established. When we look at maybe an ideal prototype Xavi style signing, whether it's in January, if the money's available, or probably more likely next summer, who do you think he could have his eye on?
I mean, the rumours are Karim Adeyemi, right, at Salzburg as a forward. And I think that makes a lot of sense when you look at how he plays. He's very fast, very direct, can dribble, can shoot, can play wide right, wide left, or up front. I think that, to me, he's the prototypical. He'd be great for Xavi because he could play as a winger, as a natural winger on the left as well, could play as a winger on the right, could play up front. And he's young. He loves Barcelona. There's a quote going back where he said, you know, my dream is to end up playing at Barca with Lionel Messi. I mean, Messi's not there anymore, but Barca is still there. So I think that's a very sensible sign. I think if you get in there, that's one of those signings, right? The normal pecking order would see Barca go in for Haaland and then Dortmund sign Adeyemi to replace Haaland, right? That's the normal, what's the word? That's the normal food chain, right?
That's the normal food chain, right?
The normal food chain. But maybe Barca can nip in ahead because obviously I don't think they have the financial might, not so much to pay Haaland's release, because I think they could pay that. It's the wages and Mino Raiola's commission that will put it out of their stratosphere. So maybe they'll nip ahead of the food chain and just go and get Adeyemi directly. The other rumors I've linked with, they've been linked with Arthur Cabral, a Brazilian striker who's at Basel. Very big body, rough and tumble, Luis Suarez-esque kind of striker. Now, I mean, I'm not saying he's as good as Luis Suarez because he's not, but he's got his 22 goals in 20 games this season. He's very strong, physical, good in the air, and he tends to score outrageous goals. Like, he just has shots from 30 yards and they go in, tries volleys, tries first-time stuff. Very Suarez-esque. I'm not sure that's a Xavi kind of signing, but I could see him being useful for Barca in the sense of, I mean, he scores goals. So, you know, they don't really have someone that scores goals right now consistently. So you put Cabral in there, that could work. But Adeyemi, I think, is really good. You put Adeyemi in the front line with Memphis, with Ansu and Memphis, or Ansu and Dembele or something. That's a very, very, very potent front line. Very young, but very potent and very, very quick and can change positions and all that sort of thing. So I think those two are the ones. I don't know anyone else. I mean, the dream signing for me, as I said, Barca dream signing will be Lisandro Martinez at Ajax. I think Argentine defender, left-footed centre-back, silky. You saw, if you watched Ajax's game against Besiktas, Panathinaikos Besiktas, Lisandro got an assist for one of Haller's goals and got a pre-assist for his other goal, which was this 40-yard pass that cut through the midfield and the defence of Besiktas to lay it on a plate for Tagliafico to cut it back for Ale. It's amazing. He would be my dream signing for a defence. Don't think that will happen, mind you, because it will cost too much. But yeah, Adeyemi. Keep an eye on Adeyemi. Keep an eye on Cabral. Maybe something's going to happen there.
Yeah, indeed. I think whichever way it goes down, it's going to be a busy start to 2022 for Xavi. Guys, we're going to call it there for the Barcelona edition of the Squawker Talker podcast today. Rick, Mo, as always, thanks so much for your time.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks very much for having me on.
Great stuff, guys. Much appreciated indeed. And as always, here on the Squawker Talker podcast, if you hit subscribe up the top there, you can get a brand new episode every single week. Mo, myself, and another guest will be back next week getting stuck into a big talking point from Premier League football. Don't forget to check out the podcast then, and we'll speak to you very, very soon.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.